This is Audible.
Blackstone Audio presents Wizard for Hire by Obert Skye. This book is read by Kirby Hayborn. To Krista, the girl who works magic at every turn and makes this world a place worth being. It is a fact that all who have lived through some loss and heartache. Yes, there is happiness, but everyone alive experiences sadness at one time or another. If you ache, you are not unusual. Friends disappoint. Betrayal is real, and there is always the possibility of losing someone dear. It is worrisome to begin a story beneath shades of shadow and gloom, but it is wise to remember that despite all the worry, there is magic afoot. Chapter 1. Such a shame to ruin this bright, lazy, sunny day. In the dense Oregon woods, there was a small cabin, a little wooden home with a crooked green roof and round windows. The cabin was surrounded by aspens and oaks and topped off with clouds that loved to huddle above it. Behind the home was a thin stream that ran parallel to a tall wall of black, mossy stone. As the noon hour arrived, a small hole opened in the clouds, allowing a loose rope of sunlight to drop down. The light coiled up into a mound of warmth, flopping against the ground and lighting up the front steps of the cabin. A man with a dark mustache and thick brown hair sat on the steps. He lifted his right hand above his eyes to look up at the light. Next to the man was a woman with glowing skin and hair the color of milk chocolate. The man was Dr. Emmett Toffee. The woman, his wife, was also a doctor, but her name was Mia. Two charming people sitting in front of an interesting cabin in the middle of a lush forest. Make that three. Because next to Mia was Ozzy, their 7-year-old boy with wide gray eyes. His complexion was dark and his hair was thick and black, like a night with no stars. At 7, he was already tall for his age, but thin. He had a deep purple birthmark that covered the pointer finger on his left hand like a single finger sheath. Despite the dark complexion, hair, and finger, Ozzy's face was giving the sunlight some competition. The boy smiled at his parents as he played with a plastic dragon on the steps near his mother. "I never get tired of this sunshine," Ozzy's father said, still looking up. "I have an affection for light." "It is wonderful," his mother observed. "The forest is perfect, Emmett. I'm afraid I don't miss the east at all." 2 months before, they had moved with Ozzy into the isolated Oregon forest. Emmett was a neuroscientist. He was also an inventor. Mia was a brilliant theoretical psychologist, studying how people thought and acted and dreamed. They had lived successfully back east for many years, but they had recently sold everything and, under the cloak of darkness, taken Ozzy across the country to Oregon. The cabin they had purchased was hidden from the world. There were no roads leading up to it, or even trails. They received no mail, had no visitors, and since they had arrived, Ozzy had seen no one other than his parents. The inside of their wooden home was filled from floor to ceiling with boxes that had yet to be opened or organized. The only place that had any semblance of composure was Ozzy's space. His room was in the attic, which was accessible by climbing 20 thin wooden stairs. Engraved on the front of each stair were dozens of small black stars that made it look like Ozzy was traveling the cosmos to reach his room. Other than that, the inside of the house looked like a convention of cardboard and chaos, and it didn't seem as if the doctors were in any hurry to remedy that. They had unpacked only the essentials for the moment. "The boxes can wait," Dr. Emmett always said. "Today is about what's already unpacked." The family had spent their first few weeks walking through the trees and planting a garden back by the stream. Ozzy's parents taught him how to do things for himself and let the boy read to them to improve his mind. At night, he would be tucked into bed in his small attic room where a single round window let in moonbeams and lit the space in a magical light. While Ozzy slept, his father would work in the basement and his mother would put pen to paper on the ground floor office, both laboring over things that Ozzy knew nothing about. But today there was no laboring, just sunshine and a bit of resting on the steps after a small hike. The image was idyllic, a mother and father and their small child on the porch steps of a quaint mountain cabin. There were city families that would have paid good money to have their pictures taken in such a scene, a family portrait they could show their friends as proof of how close they were to nature and each other. For the Toffees, however, it wasn't an act. It was their life. They were safe and hidden away from something of which Ozzy was completely unaware. The gray-eyed child moved his plastic dragon into the soil of a potted flower on the porch. He pillaged the bright azaleas. "Ozzy," his mother said with a warm smile, "your dragon might enjoy running through the stream more than dirtying its talons here in the mud. And you're old enough to play behind the house by yourself."
"Just don't go beyond sight of the cabin," his father said.
Ozzy grinned. He collected his dragon and, like a small independent adult, walked around the house and behind the cabin. The stream wasn't more than a couple of feet wide and a few inches deep, but it ran all year and filled the air with the constant burble of tumbling water. It originated from a spring near a dark stone wall and wove through the nearby trees and down away from the cabin. The dark wall was covered in moss and the stain of a million years of wet skies. Animals of all kinds gathered often near the water to drink. A skinny brown fox who had been doing just that saw the boy and darted off. Ozzy knelt and set his dragon in the water. A cold trickle of liquid washed around his small fingers, and he shivered. The toys stomped through the water and over the slick rocks. Ozzy missed his home in New York, but memories of it were already beginning to fade. The few friends he'd had, the store on the corner that sold cheese and bread, Jonathan the doorman, who always gave him sweets. The dragon splashed through the water as Ozzy created new and mossier memories.
"Attack! Ambush!"
Ozzy heard his mother scream from the front of the cabin. The young boy dropped his toy and kneeled tall. His mother screamed again. He could hear his father shouting and unknown voices shouting back. Ozzy stood up and ran. His steps were uneven as he bolted forward in what looked like a prolonged stumble. He reached the front of the house and saw several men in green clothing. Some were in the cabin. Two of them were pulling his parents into the trees and away from the scene.
"Mom!"
Ozzy screamed.
"Ozzy!"
she yelled. Ozzy froze. Fear made it impossible for him to move. He was too scared to help his parents, but there was no way he could turn and run away. His feet felt like roots planted deep in the ground and hardened from age.
"Ozzy!"
his dad screamed.
"Ozzy!"
One of the men put a rag over Emmett's mouth. Another did the same to Mia. Ozzy's parents thrashed and kicked, but their mouths were covered, and they were no match for the hulking men who had them bound. Ozzy's father was struck behind the head and collapsed. Mia saw the strike and lost consciousness from the horror of it all. The men picked up the two Toffees and threw them over their shoulders like rolled-up rugs. Then, as if they were subtle brushstrokes on the edge of a painted forest, they faded into the trees and were no longer discernible. Two of the green men stepped out onto the porch and spotted Ozzy.
"Hey!"
one of them yelled.
"Stay right there!"
The man yelling was thin, with a black beard and a hooked nose. Ozzy stared as the man slowly began to move closer. The look on Blackbeard Hooked Nose's face was sinister. The other man was short, with red hair and an uneasy look.
"We're not going to hurt you," Hooked Nose said calmly. "Don't move."
Ozzy shivered violently, and his feet broke free from the soil. The two men lunged forward as Ozzy spun around and took off running. He ran back behind the cabin, across the stream, and scurried up over the black wall. Once there, Ozzy jumped down under a fallen tree and hid himself beneath the branches of a feathery bush. He could hear Hooked Nose stomping around nearby.
"Come out, boy! We won't hurt you."
Ozzy stayed perfectly still. The red-haired man moved closer. Through one of the cracks in the bush, Ozzy watched the men searching for him. He closed his eyes and clamped his teeth, wishing he could disappear and reappear someplace safe. He opened his eyes to discover that his wish hadn't come true. The men yelled a few more times before Blackbeard hollered out,
"Forget it, Eric! Let's search the home!"
"What about the kid?"
the short man asked. The hole in the clouds above cinched up and took every bit of sunlight and warmth with it.
"Leave him. We've got the doctors."
Ozzy didn't dare even quiver. Tears dropped from his eyes like wet coins. They plunked softly into the pool of water collecting in the dirt around him, creating a hopeless wishing well. The men climbed over the stone wall and returned to the cabin to do some pillaging of their own. Ozzy stayed where he was, too frightened to move. Eventually the sun went down, and all sounds of anyone in or around the cabin ceased. The world was silent. The boy worked his way out of his hiding place and, slowly and cautiously, snuck back to the front of the cabin. What he found was sickening. There were boxes and papers tossed all over the front porch. The door was open, and he could see that inside the home had been ransacked as well. His parents were nowhere to be seen. Ozzy stood like a small, broken tree. He hung his head and cried. If anyone had been there to witness the scene, their hearts would have broken for him. But no one was there. In fact, Ozzy was very much alone, and he would remain that way for quite some time. It's terrible to be lonely. It's even worse to be lonely, 7, and on your own. Chapter 2. You've just never been out in the woods alone. Ozzy was left for dead. He was a 7-year-old child in a thick, lonely forest with no real knowledge of where he was or what he should do. His only desire was to see his parents again, and that desire was not going to be fulfilled anytime soon. He would have buried his head in the rich brown soil and given up. But his will to survive kicked in just enough for him to drink a little water and eat a little food. The cabin had been properly torn apart by the men who had taken Ozzy's parents. All the boxes on the main floor in the basement had been rifled through, and his small attic room at the top of the starry staircase had been turned inside out. It was a rustic home with no electricity, and because of that, the nights were cold and dark. And fear like Ozzy's 7-year-old brain couldn't even imagine would take over until, exhausted, he would fall into a sleep that offered no comfort. Each day, however, the pain lessened in tiny, unfelt increments. As months slipped by, the relief became more measurable. The nights weren't as frightening, in fact, they became somewhat familiar. And his slumber offered dreams that would replay memories of his parents' faces, and give him reason to smile in his sleep. In the light of day, Ozzie would sit on the porch steps waiting for his parents to return. When that grew too painful, he would search through the boxes he was strong enough to move and open. In the basement, he found crate after crate of dried and canned food. His parents, it seemed, had been planning to stay hidden and fed for a very long time. On the main floor, he pushed and shoved the boxes to make a maze of sorts. Outside of the house, the bushes grew lush and wild. They began to consume and cloak the exterior. By the time Ozzie was 10, the small cabin resembled more a large leafy knoll than an abode. The trees and bushes around the home had begun to work their roots and branches through the walls and windows. The invading growth made the place look like a home that a wizard or a talking beaver might live in, and camouflaged it nicely. A stranger walking by wouldn't notice there was even a home there. Of course, due to the remote location, no strangers ever walked by, or even near. By the time Ozzie turned 12, the cloaked house was just that. Now, as night began to fall, Ozzie stood up on the porch stairs and looked into the sky. He was wearing a white t-shirt that had belonged to his father and shorts that he had made from a pair of his father's pants. He wore no shoes. Because of that, his feet were tough. He could easily walk barefoot on the stones around his home. His black hair was long, and his gray eyes had darkened a bit over time. Ozzie felt at home by himself and almost content. He had lived off of stockpiled food and what he had grown in the garden. He had no way of knowing how unusual it was for someone to have a basement full of canned food. He thought perhaps every boy had their parents taken from them, that it was par for the course to live alone in a vegetation-cloaked cabin without any influence from the outside world. He figured he would grow old, meet a girl, have a son, and then one day be taken away from that child. The circle of life. Ozzie turned and walked into the cloaked house. Like most nights, he planned to read by candlelight until he was tired. It was no small miracle that Ozzie was a voracious reader when his parents were taken. Because of that, he had gone through all the books that were on bookshelves and any he'd found in boxes. His vocabulary and understanding had grown in leaps and bounds. His parents had been obsessed with the mind. Many of the books they owned were medical or philosophical in nature. Recently, however, Ozzie had discovered a few large boxes filled with titles he hadn't seen before. Many of them dealt with science and invention and psychology, but in one of the heaviest boxes, he found books of adventure and fantasy. Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The words were all more imaginative and fun than the books he had been reading, and the stories took him away from the cloaked house and into castles and caves and spaceships that were exciting, magical, and improbable. The books had also given Ozzie something to hope for. Reading them made it seem entirely possible that he, too, had a gift of some sort, a power or wondrous ability. He just needed to figure it out. He had begun writing a short list of gifts he could eliminate since he had already tried and failed. So far, the list consisted of flight, super speed, and whistling. Ozzie gathered some food and walked through the maze of boxes on the main floor, making his way to the starry stairs. He could see the small black stars engraved into the fronts of all 20 steps. Climbing to his attic room always made him feel like he was ascending to the heavens. He grabbed the wooden ball on the top of the newel post and pulled himself forward. As he did, his foot slipped on the edge of the stair and he fell forward. He landed on his stomach and hit his head against the fifth stair. His eyes saw additional stars. He turned and sat up on the third stair. Glancing down to assess his condition, he noticed that he was holding the round wooden ball from the top of the newel post. Ozzie looked at the wooden knob. It was about the size of a tennis ball, with a base like the bottom of a light bulb. At the end of the base, however, there was a 2-inch metal rod sticking out. The end of the rod was shaped like an 8-pointed star. Ozzy turned his head as he sat on the third step and looked at the stars on the stairs. "I wonder," he said. He turned further and pressed the end of the metal star up against one of the shapes engraved on the first step. The size and design matched the painted stars. He studied the object in his hand. Ozzy felt the stars stamped on the front of the first and second stairs. They were all solid and simple. He felt the stars on the front of the third step. 2 stars over from the right edge, his fingers detected a slight difference. This star felt different than the others, and when he pushed on it, there was a very slight give. Ozzy placed the tip of the metal key over the star. It lined up perfectly. He carefully pushed the rod right into the stair. With almost no effort, the strange key slid in. Ozzy let go and took a moment to collect himself. He grabbed the wooden ball and turned it. There was a soft clicking noise, followed by the top of the third step popping open. It rose to reveal a hidden storage area as large as the step itself.
Whoa.
Inside the stair, there was a carton about the size of a shoebox. He pulled it out and saw that the lid was taped shut. He set the box on the second stair. The boy felt around on the rest of the stairs, but he could find no other stars that felt any different. Gathering the box under his arm, he quickly climbed up to his room. The small attic space was cozy and tucked away. Some tree branches had begun to grow into the walls and curl through the wood, and like other parts of the house, it seemed to only add to the general enchantment of the place. Ozzy's bed was soft. There was a small wooden nightstand next to it. In one corner of the room was a cloth-covered chair. Books were scattered everywhere. Any book he had read had been brought up and stacked onto one of the many piles. His bed was cocooned by all of them. The room had one single round window that squeaked mightily whenever it was opened. Ozzy set the box on his bed and lit a candle. The small flame illuminated his room nicely. He sat on his bed and put the container on his lap. Moving it around, he studied each side. It was made of a hard, dark material, not rubber, not metal, but something in between. The lid was like a shoebox and was sealed with thick, gray tape. Written in marker on top of the box was the word Clark. Ozzy grabbed a small pocket knife he kept on his nightstand and carefully sliced the tape open. Then, with more excitement than he had felt in a while, he grasped the edge of the lid and pulled it open. Ozzy smiled. Inside the box was an old cassette player. It was wide and long and had a cassette tape already in it. There were 6 buttons and a 6-inch square of silver painted on the top of it. Toffee was written in gold marker across the bottom of it. Having no idea what a cassette tape was, much less a cassette player, Ozzy pulled the machine out of the box and stared at it in awe. Beneath it in the box, there were a dozen carefully stacked cassette tapes. As interesting as the small machine was, the box held something Ozzy thought was far more intriguing. Lying there on top of the cassette tapes was what looked to be a black bird. Ozzy reached in and gently lifted the creature. It was lighter than he'd expected. Its wings were an odd sort of plastic fitted between thin wires. It had a tail of tin and a golden beak. Its feet were sculpted and each talon was tipped with copper. Its 2 eyes were shut and attached to its round head. Wire-like feathers stuck out the top. The body of the bird was about 5 inches long and cylindrical. Ozzy studied every inch of it, looking for a button to push or a switch to turn on. There were none. Like the cassette machine, the bird had a wide line of silver painted along its back.
Brilliant.
Ozzy had no idea what it really might be, but he was happy he had found it. Something with a face to keep inside and near him. Clinging to the bird with one hand, he played with a cassette player with the other. Even after figuring out how to get the tapes in and out, pressing play and shaking it a little, nothing happened. Still, he kept trying to make either the bird or the machine do something. A couple of hours later, Ozzy blew out the candle and lay back in his bed. It had been over 5 years since his parents had disappeared into the trees, and this was the happiest he had been since. Sure, the things he'd found didn't seem to do anything, but they had belonged to his parents. They had been important enough to hide, and one of them had a name. Clark. Chapter 3. Evidence of what he was like. The next day, the sun came out in full force. Like a skilled pugilist, it pounded light through the branches and into shadows it had never broken up before. Water from the stream tasted better. The dried carrots from the basement seemed almost fresh. And Ozzy had Clark. All morning, he had studied the cassette player and the bird. At noon, he had taken them outside to observe them under the bright light. Ozzy set Clark on the porch step right next to him and focused on the machine.
There has to be a way to start this, Ozzy told the lifeless bird.
Clark didn't reply. The cassette player was 10 inches wide, 12.5 inches long, and 2 inches tall. Ozzy knew this because he had measured it with a ruler. There was a square of silver paint on the top that matched the strip of silver on Clark's back, and a plastic insert that popped up so you could slide tapes into it. It had 6 buttons, one for play, one for stop, one for record, one for fast forward, one for reverse, and one for eject. Ozzy pressed eject, and the tape popped up again. He pulled it out of the machine and twisted the 2 sprockets with his fingers. One side of the tape was labeled approximations, a word Ozzy didn't totally understand. The other side was labeled results. Ozzy didn't care what the tape contained. His only thought was that it might have the sound of his parents' voices, and that to him seemed like a magical possibility.
I know machines need electricity to power them, Ozzy said to Clark. We used to have power when we lived in New York. It was a big place. The buildings there were taller than trees, and they had all kinds of foods, not just dried and canned things. I remember a man who sold huge pretzels from a cart in the park.
Ozzy put the cassette tape back into the player and looked up at the sunlight coming through the trees. He let the warmth soak into his skin and stayed still as it worked its way into his bones and being. The last place he had been with his parents was here on the now overgrown steps. The plastic dragon he had been playing with was still in the stream behind the house, buried by years of dirt and leaves and sadness.
I don't like thinking about them, Ozzy said to himself. I know I should, but every thought makes me feel horrible.
I feel the same way, maybe worse.
Ozzy froze. Something beside him had spoken. He wanted to turn his head and look, but, like the moment his parents had been snatched away, he was paralyzed.
It's okay to feel bad, the voice said, and you shouldn't be afraid to think of them.
Who's saying that?
Ozzy asked, still too scared to turn his head.
Me.
Ozzy felt a small prick on his left arm.
He screamed and scurried backward up onto the porch and against the house.
"Easy," the voice said. "Panic isn't a good look on you."
Something black hopped towards Ozzy, and he saw it was Clark. Except now the bird was standing on his feet, his wide dark eyes and wings open. He hopped closer to Ozzy, and the boy howled again.
"That scream isn't going to make us any friends," Clark said. "I mean, it shows you're vulnerable, but is that a trait people like? You should be glad you're in a forest and nobody can hear you."
"You're talking," Ozzy said needlessly.
"I think communication is important," the bird reported, "and the sunlight seems to have restored my spirits. I have to admit it feels pretty good to be alive again."
Ozzy just stared.
"Sorry, I should tell you that I feed off the light. Any light, really, but I guess it took some real sunshine to kick me back into gear."
Ozzy's expression did not change.
"I can tell you're confused, so let me explain. The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace. It sends its rays billions of miles through outer space, and when they hit the silver strip on my back, they sort of juice me up."
"I know how the sun works," Ozzy managed to say.
"You do look smart. What happened to your finger?"
Ozzy held up his hand and looked at his red finger.
"It's a birthmark."
"It's cool looking," Clark said.
"The color reminds me of a bird I once knew.
She was beautiful."
"Thanks, I guess. So you've been in that box the whole time?"
"I remember being created, pieced together, and brought to life by a man who, judging by appearance, was your father?"
"My dad built you?"
"Was Dr. Emmett your dad?"
"Yes, so you know him?"
"I do. He built me to be a sounding board for his ideas. He would talk to me as he worked. We're pretty close."
"What about my mom?"
"The woman? I remember moments with her. She would come around while he was working. She was smart."
"Why did my dad pack you away? I mean, I never saw you."
"I don't know. One day he took me out of the light and my will faded. From there, things are nothing but dark."
"Will you stay with me here?"
Clark tilted his tiny metal head and gazed at Ozzy.
"I mean, you won't leave, right?"
"Not unless you pack me away," Clark said.
"I won't."
"Good, because I prefer the light. And I'm no trouble. I don't even need food, although I do enjoy the texture of chewing certain things. Oh yeah, I'm attracted to stuff made of metal. That's not weird, is it?" "No, that can't be weird. Do you mind if I take a short flight up into the sunshine?"
"You'll come back?"
"Wow, you've got a real fear of abandonment. That's sad. But don't worry, I'll always come back."
Clark flew up off the porch and straight up into the blue sky. He twisted and dove down, letting the wind catch his wings. True to his word, after a few minutes, he turned and glided back down to the porch. He landed near Ozzy and then hopped up and perched himself on his right knee. Ozzy studied the bird in awe.
"Are there any other birds around here?" Clark asked.
"None like you, but there are lots of regular ones."
Clark brushed back the wiry feathers on his head with his wings.
"I don't mind regular. There was this sparrow I kind of liked outside of your dad's work. We sort of had a thing, but we were divided by glass."
"Sorry."
"That's okay. There are plenty of birds in the sky. At least that's what your dad used to tell me before he shut me down. Besides, my real love is metal."
Clark cocked his head and looked Ozzy in the eyes.
"Why are you named Clark?"
"I'm not sure. Probably because it's a strong name."
"Right, but does it mean something like computerized living animal research bird?"
"Then my name would be Clarb." Ozzie continued to stare at Clark. I bet I know what you're thinking, the bird said. I'm actually good at assessing people's thoughts. Your father built me to be observant. Besides, your gray eyes are an open book.
Okay, then what am I thinking?
You're curious about how I work. You're excited thinking about the silver paint on my back and how the sunlight brought me to life. I bet you're also wondering if the light that brought me to life could do the same for the cassette machine.
Ozzie's expression was one of amazement.
Go ahead and try it, Clark said, pointing his wing toward the small machine sitting on the steps. It's been in the sun for a few minutes. It probably works now.
Ozzie scooted over to the machine and touched it. It was warm from the sun. He looked at Clark and then reached out and pressed play. There was a slight whirring, followed by the sound of Ozzie's father's voice. In times of suspicion and ignorance, people turn to superstition to answer their problems. We must help those who do so see the error of their ways.
Ozzie didn't want to, but he began to cry. Clark, being both observant and compassionate, tried to do the same. Unfortunately, it's difficult for birds to shed a tear, and trying to move his shoulders like Ozzie made him look like he'd been accidentally electrocuted.
I'll just look sad, Clark offered.
Ozzie played tape after tape. Most of them were filled with his father talking about the human brain and experiments he was doing at the university where he taught. He listed different tests and failures. Some of the tapes were boring, but Ozzie's favorite was the one labeled WC Subjects. It contained the stories of five different people who had done remarkably stupid things. Another tape was labeled Ben Folds Five. When he played that tape, he was surprised by the sound of music. It was exhilarating and filled his head with emotions he had never felt before.
What is this stuff? Ozzie asked.
Music. You humans are always trying to sing things, but it's us birds that do it best. Your father used to play this tape constantly.
I want to be lonely. When the seconds pass slowly and years go flying by. The music filled the forest and caused Ozzie's heart to simultaneously sink and soar. He listened to the entire cassette and then switched tapes and listened to his dad's voice until the machine finally stopped a few hours after the sun went down. Chapter 4. Wondering Who I Am. The cloaked house became a much different place with Clark around. The bird needed light to live, but he could gather strength from the weak glow of a cloudy day. He also had the ability to store enough energy to keep himself active through most of the night. At times, he would need the assistance of candlelight to recharge, or he would shut down for a few hours until the sun rose again. But as soon as he was placed in any light, he would always come alive once more. On sunny days, Clark would fly off on long excursions and bring back news of birds he had seen and been rejected by. He would travel to the ocean and return with seashells. He would fly to the mountains and come back with pebbles and leaves. He would scout the forest and return to tell tales that Ozzie listened to carefully and with great interest. As much as Ozzie loved having Clark around, Ozzie was equally taken with the new wonder of hearing his father's voice. Most days he would spend hours listening to his dad talk about boring things like particle decay and brain peptides. Ozzie didn't mind the topic because it was as if his father was there with him. He had listened to all the tapes. As he listened to the last one, he was thrilled to find that there was a brief instance of his mother's voice. She said only a few words, but it was magic. She had come in as Ozzie's father was recording, and before he shut off the machine, she said, "Do you think you might like to take a break? Ozzie's awake and asking for you."
The recording stopped after that.
I'm guessing he took a break, Clark said.
Yeah, I like to think he took a break to be with me.
You know what I think you've been thinking? The bird asked.
What?
Ozzy said. That most parents don't just get taken. I mean, I bet you think it's unusual that your parents would move out here where there's no electricity and no other people and then just be snatched up. They must have had to hike to even get here. How did they transport all of these boxes? No offense, but your house looks like a storage unit on the inside.
I don't know, Ozzy replied.
Don't you think that maybe we should figure out a few things? Are we just going to stay here forever?
No. Someday I'll have to leave to find my parents.
What day is someday?
I don't know, Ozzy answered honestly. I've just always thought that I'd need to be older. I'm not even sure what's beyond the next mile of forest. I've seen pictures and read books, of course. J.K. Rowling does a pretty good job of describing Harry's part of the world, but here, you keep finding shells at the ocean, and you talk about seeing cars and people, but I don't know what's real and what's not. For example, are dragons real?
I think so, but I haven't seen one yet.
I think they can't be, but then here I am having a conversation with a metal bird.
Clark hopped onto the porch and looked Ozzy in the eyes. He tilted his head.
So, are you going to do something about it? Do you think someday your parents will just walk up and say, "Sorry, we got a little distracted. We're back now. How about some soup?"
Soup?
It's a comfort food, Clark informed him. Not the dehydrated kind from the basement.
Forget the soup. Think big picture. What if your parents never return? You have water, but at some point you're going to run out of food. There are fewer boxes of it in the basement every month. You have your garden, but you're still hungry. How often do you think about roasting something meaty over a fire?
I wouldn't mind that.
Just make sure it's not a raven.
Is that what you are?
Ozzy asked.
I think so.
Well, what if the world is only filled with horrible people like the ones who roast ravens and took my parents?
Ozzy asked. Wouldn't you like to find that out? Some people are mean and some are nice. You just met some of the bad ones first. You said there were nice people in New York.
I was little and I can barely remember. Besides, Oregon is so far away from there. I read in a book yesterday that New York is almost 2,500 miles to the east. 2,500 miles!
Yeah, Clark said. But who really knows how long a mile is?
5,280 feet.
Well, what if you started out walking that way?
Clark pointed east with his right wing.
And you counted each foot. Eventually, you'd get there. We could do a little each day. Or at least explore the world around you a bit more. The cloaked house isn't going anywhere.
I can't lose sight of home.
Yes, you can! Come on!
It was a plea that Clark had given to Ozzy many times. He'd begged the boy to move farther into the trees, to find a world outside of the cloaked house, to go to the beach. But Ozzy had always refused. His heart felt certain that if he left, worse things would happen.
Seriously, Oz, it's time to push farther.
Ozzy looked at Clark.
I'll be right with you, Clark promised.
Ozzy steeled himself and stood up. He turned and faced west.
Okay, but let's go this way, towards the ocean.
Really?
Clark chirped.
It's the opposite direction of New York, but I like that you finally made the decision. They have some terrific seashells that way.
Clark tweeted happily. Since he was made of metal, his chirping sounded more like hot wires sparking together than a bird. Still, his enthusiasm was contagious. The bird flew up to Ozzy's head and did a sort of dance in his hair.
By the way, your hair has all the makings of a terrific nest.
Thanks.
Seriously, give me an hour, a few twigs, and some sap, and I could make something amazing.
Please don't.
I can't promise I won't. Let's go!
Ozzy reached down and grabbed two handfuls of dark dirt. With soil in hand, he began to walk west.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
he said as he walked. Each time he said 10, he would drop a little soil and then begin to count to 10 again. When he ran out of dirt, he would reach down and get more. With his heart pumping wildly, he moved farther and farther away from home. He contemplated turning around countless times, but Clark was always there to make sure he didn't. Ozzy continued picking up soil and marking his path for almost an hour before he came to some stony ground where he couldn't find dirt to pick up. Where the stony ground began, the trees ended, the land dropped away, and past that, Ozzy could see nothing but sand and ocean.
Wow!
Ozzy was mesmerized by the sight. His tight, secluded world unfolded in a way that made him shiver.
I should have done this sooner.
Yeah, you should have.
Ozzy climbed down the stone cliffs and ran to the water. Chapter 5. A Small First Glimpse. The sun set slowly, like stubborn butter refusing to melt. The last rays hit the front of the castle and lit up the two beings standing at the door, one a wizard, the other unimportant. The wizard pushed back the sleeves of his oddly short, bathrobe-like robe and knocked 3 times. He looked over at his trollish companion.
Pay close attention and you'll see how things work.
His companion only sniffed. With a loud whine, the doors were pulled open, and the wizard and his companion were escorted in. They were led quickly down a hall by a man with very little chin and too much forehead.
Tell me the need,
the wizard asked the man as they walked.
She needs sleep,
Little Chin said.
It's been days, and her livelihood suffers because of it.
The three of them entered a small sleeping chamber. Near the end of the bed, there was a woman sitting in a soft chair. In the low light, she looked dark and troubled.
You seek sleep?
The wizard asked.
I require it,
she whispered fiercely.
Give me slumber and I'll reward you. Fail, and you will pay.
Sharp words from such a desperate soul,
he replied.
But your terms are more than fair.
The wizard pushed back his sleeves, pulled out his wand, and went to work. Chapter 6. Being awake never felt like this before. Almost every day for the next few months, Ozzy and Clark would run through the forest and make their way to the beach. That particular stretch of shore was always empty, but every once in a while there were footprints on the sand from someone who had walked through at another time. But those footprints always faded. To Ozzy, Oregon seemed like a place with no inhabitants and miles of lonely forest and sand. A few times they saw boats miles out on the water, but they all eventually disappeared into the distance. Ozzy wanted Clark to fly out and see what the boats were hauling, but Clark had an irrational fear of water, so flying over the ocean was a no-go.
Say I break a wing and fall into the deep water. I'm all metal and plastic, and I don't have lungs. I'll sink like a stone, or, in my case, a metal bird.
The lonely beach area was cut off on both sides by rocky cliffs and boulder-strewn shores. Ozzy would swim in the water and play his music as the sun beat down. The melodies sounded even better when accompanied by the ocean. Did Mother Nature tell you, boy,
You come and go as you please. That's what she said to me.
Ozzy would also build sandcastles in the shape of buildings he had read about in books. Then Clark would hop around them until gravity or the waves caused them to break up and fall apart. When darkness came, they would walk back to the cloaked house through the forest and fall asleep, dreaming of the next day. The hike to the beach became a routine, and before Ozzy knew it, he was 13 and almost 4 inches taller. His father's shirts he wore were no longer dress length, they were shirt length. So, to cover his bottom half, Ozzy would wear his mother's pants. Having no idea what society deemed appropriate, Ozzy didn't mind borrowing from his mother's wardrobe at all. The ocean was bright and sunnier than usual. The brown sand along the shore was warm and begged Ozzy's toes and fingers to bury themselves in it. He set the cassette recorder down on a large flat rock and pressed play. The air filled with songs that were overly familiar to him now.
"Do you ever wish you had more music?"
"I think I'm lucky to have this," Ozzy said. "I can set my beak to autoplay and we could listen to me for a while."
"No thanks, I like this song."
Ozzy played in the waves and collected some shells. When that was done, he built a large sandcastle in the shape of Hogwarts. Clark hopped around the outside, pretending to be a Dementor, as Ozzy perfected the edges.
"Is that supposed to be Hogwarts?"
a strange voice asked. Both Ozzy and Clark froze.
"I mean, it's not bad."
Ozzy looked up from the castle and saw what could only be described as a human. She looked female and close to his age. She had long, black, curly hair and smiled even though she wasn't trying to. Her skin was light brown and more interesting than the entire sea. Ozzy didn't know whether to throw up or pass out.
"Are you all right?" she asked. "And is that your toy?"
She was pointing at Clark, who was standing completely still near the front entrance of Hogwarts.
"Are you okay?" she asked again. "I like the music you're playing."
"It's good," Ozzy awkwardly managed to say. A tall woman in the distance yelled,
"Siggy, come on, let's go."
The girl turned and yelled back,
"Coming!"
Siggy looked at Ozzy.
"Well, I guess I'll see you later. Or maybe not. Either way, nice Hogwarts."
The girl took off running down the shore toward the tall lady. Siggy's exit didn't do anything to put Ozzy at ease. He stayed in the same hunched-over position until Clark finally spoke up.
"Wow, you are not good around other humans. Not good at all."
You...
"See what I mean? You should probably find a book in your house that explains how to interact with others."
"I've never seen anything so amazing or strange."
"I'm sure whoever that was would love to hear you describe her as strange."
"I mean, she looked like the sun."
"Ugh, do I sound that bad when I talk about metal or birds?"
Clark's gold beak sparkled under the sunlight as he spoke. "She's a girl and she tried to talk to you and you said nothing. She ran off, and now you're free to be alone again."
"She might come back."
"You think that about everything."
"Do you think she lives around here?"
"I've seen a few homes and other buildings on my flights."
"Maybe it's time to start exploring other directions.
A girl named Siggy compliments you on your sandcastle, and suddenly you're Magellan."
"The Explorer?"
Ozzy said.
"Still, that's not a bad idea. We should map out our surroundings. You could fly and report things, and I'll draw them."
Clark clapped his wings.
"Great! With my wings in your hands, we can't fail."
"And I think we should start with that direction."
Ozzy pointed down the beach in the direction Siggy had run off.
"Even if I wasn't observant, you would still be easier to read than a book." You want me to follow her? Just to find out if she's a visitor or if she lives around here. Right. I'll head back to the cloaked house to sharpen some map drawing pencils. Clark took to the air and Ozzy stood up and shook sand from his clothes. He turned off the music and picked up the cassette player. He put it in his backpack and then started the run back home. Existence is so much more enjoyable when you have a purpose for moving. From the tapes of Dr. Emmett Toffee, subject number 1.
Lisa. It was the middle of the last act of an off-Broadway musical titled Lament. The theater was small but sold out. As the story built and the music swelled, the audience could feel the rise of emotion and the climax approaching. Lisa stood up from her seat and walked down the aisle. Wrapped up in the story, nobody paid much attention to her. She got to the front of the stage and turned left as if to exit out the side door. Instead, she pushed through a heavy velvet curtain and climbed 3 steps up the side of the stage. Without pausing, she walked into the middle of the performance and began to sing and dance in place. I saw the sign, and it opened up my eyes, and I am happy now. The shock of it caused the entire cast to momentarily stop what they were doing and stare at the strange woman. 2 stagehands raced in from opposite sides of the stage and hauled her off. The actors, ever professionals, picked up where they had been interrupted and continued to act. Lisa was taken to the nearest police station and questioned. She had no idea why she had done it. She also had no police record, no history of mental illness, no prior moments of impropriety. She was a well-to-do New York socialite who had never done anything remotely out of place. She also didn't care for the song she had been singing. Lisa was released and instructed to check in with her doctor. When she did visit her physician, he found no signs of any illness. He also couldn't explain why she had done what she did. Chapter 7. Get the Job Done. Ozzy was 14. He had no way of knowing this because despite his desire for learning and inquisitive mind, he had never begun to keep track of the days. The weather grew slightly colder and then warmed up a bit. Summer followed and fall stomped in behind that. His parents' books made him aware of time and dates, but he'd never made the effort to keep track. There were no clocks or phones or TVs to yell out the time and date. He had grown from a child to a boy who stood over 6 feet tall and looked considerably older than he was. During the last year, he had gone to the beach often, hoping to see Siggy again. But he never had. In fact, he'd not seen another single soul on the shore. But things were different in his other directions of exploration. Ozzy and Clark had mapped out an ever-widening circle from the cloaked house. Ozzy no longer thought he was alone in the world. He and Clark had found countless homes and roads and even a small town, Otter Rock, about 5 miles to the north. Ozzy had walked on paved roads, peered through store windows, and lived to draw about it. "That's looking amazing," Clark said as he watched Ozzy sketch another tree on the master map. "You must have cartography in your blood." "I just like knowing where things are in relation to home." Clark hopped around the map. It was spread out on the kitchen table, drawn on thick white sheets of paper taped together in a giant square. The map detailed the shore and about 5 miles in all other directions. It didn't show every tree and puddle, but if there was an unusual landmark or oddity, Ozzy had drawn it, like a tree that grew sideways, a rock the shape of a lounging hippo, bushes growing in a perfect circle, and, of course, the cloaked house, sitting in the middle of the map like the sun, sketched out to the last bushy detail. Ozzy and Clark had spent a lot of time exploring Otter Rock. Careful not to be noticed, they had walked each street and drawn every building. There was a main street with stores and restaurants. There was a McDonald's on one end of town